Hi, this is Rivki Kaplan from Sfat, and we are looking at Lekutei Sichas Chelek Yud Aleph, Parshas Mishpatim. Okay, so what I want to do first is just read the Pasuk and the Rashi on which the Rashi Sicha is based, and it's found in Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Vav, V'higishai Adonai V'Elekim V'higishu El HaDelet, So, what's the background over here? The background is referring to an individual that stole, and he did not have the means to repay his theft. And so he's basically sold to slavery in order to be able to repay his debt. And then, after a number of years, during the Shemitah year, during the sabbatical year, when he's supposed to go free, he chooses to stay behind with his new master and possibly the new family that he's built while having been a slave. And so his master needs to take him back to the original court that sold him into slavery. And he stands by the doorpost and he gets a hole in his ear. And what does Rashi tell us on this? It's a lengthy Rashi. I'm going to read the whole thing with the translation. And then we'll start discussing some of the questions that come up on the Rashi. So what does Rashi tell us? Ratzah donavas aznoi, and his master shall bore through his ear. Hayaminis, the right ear. Or eina ela shel smol, or perhaps this is incorrect and it's referring to the left one. Talmud Leimer, oizen oizen l'gzeira shava. However, the Torah says the word oizen in two places, which is the notion of the gzeira shava, when you could glean something. Because it's mentioned somewhere else, and you sort of like do like to like. And nemar kan v'rotza don neves ozna. Here it says, and the master shall bore through his ear. V'nemar and with regard to mitzayra, it says, tunuch oizen hametahar hayaminis, on the middle of the right ear of the one who's to be purified. Malahalan hayaminis, just as further on in the context of the mitzayra, it clearly refers to the ear. Af kan hayaminis, so to hear. The ear referred to is the right one. Okay. And then Rashi continues, Ma ra oizen l'ratzeya, and what is it about the ear that it deserves to be bored? We call shar evarim shabaguf, in contrast to all the other organs in the body. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai tells us, oizen zoi sheshama al har sinai lo siganai. This ear that heard at Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai, you should not steal. And nonetheless, it went and stole. Let it be bored. And as well, the if somebody sold himself, he didn't steal, but he sold himself because of out of desperate poverty. The ear that heard at Sinai, for the children of Am Yisrael are my slaves. And nevertheless, he went and he acquired for himself a master. Teiratza, it shall be pierced. Rabbi Shimon, so he's referring to the great sage Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Hayodayu Shmikrazek Min Chaimer, expounded on this verse as pleasantly as a pack of pearls, or some translate to mean as a pack of spices. What did he expound? Manishtanu Delet Umezuzah Mikol Kelen Shavabayis. What makes the difference? What is different? What is unique about the door and the doorpost to all the other furnishings that are in the house? Like, why should it dafka be involved in this commandment? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rabbi Shimon explains, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Delos u'mezuzah shayu edim Mitzrayim, the door and the doorpost that were witnesses in Mitzrayim, kishapasachti ala mashkoi v'al shtei mezuzos, when I skipped over the doorpost of Am Yisrael that had been smeared with blood, remember, from the Korban Pesach, Ramarti, and I said, Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. The children of Yisrael are slaves to me, implying, avadai heim v'loya avadim la'avadim. They are my slaves and not slaves of slaves. V'holach zeh v'kona adin la'atzmai. And despite that, the person went and wants to extend his term of servitude to a different master. Yeratzeh b'fneihem. It's fitting that his ear be pierced. Okay? So a rather packed Rashi with a lot of questions that come up. I just want to take a minute over here to talk about Rashi Sichas in general. They happen to be a real favorite of mine. And because this is specifically a woman's track, I think it's interesting to note that the Rebbe began to say Rashi Sichas as a means of dedication, Leilu Nishmas, his mother, Rebbe Tzinchana. So it was something that happened following her ptira, following her passing. And I think it's significant, you know, that when you dedicate something in tribute to one who has passed away, you dedicate something that's meaningful to the person that it's been being dedicated for, right? And I think it's significant that it's Dafka Rashi Sichas of the many, you know, there were many things that Rebbe dedicated in her honor. In addition, Rashi Sichas, which often people see, you know, as quite an academic pursuit of the Rebbe Sichas, and yet it's dedicated specifically to his mother. And I think that's something meaningful towards us as women, and, you know, something that very much resonates with me. Okay, back to the Sicha. So we're going to start by raising a number of questions, and then piece by piece, we'll start answering them. So the first question that comes up in Ois Aleph, those of you that, you know, might decide to read this inside, I'm going to mention which Ois Yis these come up in. So in Ois Aleph, we have the question, right? Why does Rashi tells us it's the right ear, but then he also adds the words, or perhaps it means the left one, meaning it's the right one, so don't assume that it would be the left one. Well, if you told me it's the right one, I'm not going to assume it's going to be the left one. So why is it necessary for Rashi to add those seemingly additional words? And those of us that are familiar with Rashi, we know that his style is very concise and very precise. So that's our first question. The second question that we have here is, why does Rashi explain here the words of Rabbi Shimon regarding the door and the doorpost? It seems that it should have been brought in a separate Rashi under those words in the Pasuk, right? And actually, you begin to see a hint of the answer within the words that Rashi uses. He says, Rabbi Shimon hoya doiresh. Doiresh, ledrosh, means that you were looking for something that's deeper than the actual pshat. So Rabbi Shimon is expounding on something that's actually not really found in the pasuk itself, but it's something that you have to dig a little bit deeper for. So why is Rashi bringing this in here? Why doesn't it stand on its own in a different pasuk? And if Rashi's primary role is always to help us understand the literal meaning of the text, why is he bringing a drash over here? The third question that we have here, well, it's not quite the third, but the next question that we have here is, if the reason we are piercing the ear is because it heard, don't steal, and for the thief, and for the individual that sold himself to slavery, it's because he said, you know, because Abishah said, I am your master, and yet he went and chose to acquire for himself a different master. That raises three more questions, okay? Firstly, why don't we pierce immediately after the transgression? Why wait the 6 years and only after he has verbally expressed interest in remaining with his master, right? If we're piercing his ears because he stole or because he chose a different master, then do it right away. Like, what, 6 years later, we're going to remind ourselves? And why does this only apply to someone who stole and doesn't have the means to repay? Shouldn't this apply to all thieves? They also heard the words, do not steal, right? Because remember this, if somebody stole and he does have the means to repay, then he repays, he has to repay, you know, double what he stole. And there's different punishments. There are consequences to his actions, but he doesn't become a slave. So why dafka somebody who steals and is so impoverished that he can't even repay his theft because he pushed it, bought food with it, and now what is he supposed to do? Why dafka does he have to, does he get seemingly punished in this manner? And the third question that we have here is, this punishment should apply to all sins. Why only specifically to one who stole and can't repay? And one who sold himself as a slave, right? Didn't we hear everything at Sinai? Like every transgression in a way you could argue, you know, if you transgress it, then every mitzvah of you transgress it, then you heard it at Sinai. Okay, this is Gimel. In Gimel, it says, really what we have here is two categories. We have one who stole, couldn't repay, and now he wants to, so he sells himself as a slave, and now he wants to stay with his master longer than is necessary. And then we have one who had no ways to care for himself, so he sold himself into slavery, right? So, but really, right now, in essence, they're both guilty of the same crime. They, even the one who stole, is in a sense guilty of the crime of acquiring for himself a different master. So why do we offer, so to speak, two different categories? Why do we offer the idea that he said, do not steal? It's really one and the same seeming issue that both categories of people are now addressing, okay? Also, the second category, the one who sold himself 6 years ago, okay, we're punishing him for having acquired himself a master all those years ago. It would seem to be more accurate to say that we're punishing him for not wanting to go free now. If we're, which again raises the question that we asked earlier, if we're punishing him for acquiring for himself a different master, well, hello, he did that already at least 6 years ago. So why don't we say that we're punishing him for not wanting to choose freedom, okay? Also, if we're familiar with Rashi, or if we're growing familiar with Rashi, we know that Rashi only copies down exactly the words that he needs. So, which raises the question, why does he say the ear that heard at Sinai? If he even would have just said the ear that heard, we all know where he heard it. I mean, Parshas Yisrael is just like a few pages back. It's obvious to anyone reading this, they would have known what he was talking about. So why necessary the words, he heard it at Sinai? Also, the seemingly additional words of where he says Rabbi Shimon used to interpret this verse like a pack of pearls, or some people say it's like a sack of spices, like a sack of perfume. Like, Rashi is not one for poetics. So what's this being brought in here for? And the final question that we're going to ask is that Rashi only shares the name of who he's quoting if knowing who the author is resolves a different question, like lends itself to clarity in another area. So we have to ask the question, well, now we know that we're talking about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and we're talking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. But what is it about them that resolves the question? Like, what question do we have that knowing who they are, it's going to give us clarity on, okay? I'm in Dalet. Rashi's primary intention is not to explain why the Torah specifically chose the ear. According to the Pshat, you don't need to explain details of a halacha. It is what it is because that's what the Abishter said. Okay, that for at face value, that's good enough. That's Pshat. But this question is raised once Rashi explains that it was the right ear. So in the pasuk, you might ask the question, which ear? Once Rashi tells us it's the right ear, then a different question arises. What's the question? The right ear, it seems to be the prominent ear, right? We always know the right side takes more prominence, right? So let's explain something over here. For starters, why does a slave deserve such a harsh and permanent punishment, right? You could argue he stole out of desperation to feed his family, right? He had no other ways to provide for them, so he resorted to a last-ditch measure of stealing, and then Nebuchadnezzar, he had nothing with which to repay it. Or somebody who sells himself, which is really against human nature, to want to be subservient to a master. We all like to be our own masters. You could say, have rachmanas on him. He pashut had no other way to feed his family, right? So on one hand, we're not punishing him for what he wants now, right? That's not what the pasuk tells us. Because on one hand, it's only normal that he shouldn't want to go free. Remember, he's developed a new normal. He's developed an attachment to his wife and kids, and he's gotten comfortable. So we're not punishing for his decision now. And on the other hand, we have rachmanis for him that he had to resort to this decision so many years before, right? So the force of the question clearly brings out that the punishment could not have been harsh. So it's not like we're coming down heavy on him, because we understand that this is, on one hand, it's normal for him to want to stay. On the other hand, it's Rachmanis that he had to steal. So clearly, it wasn't actually considered a harsh, permanent sort of punishment, but rather, everybody had ear piercings, both men, women, children, young, old. Like, it was very acceptable. So So the fact that he got his ear pierced, it wasn't like this huge public announcement, but it was more of an internal reminder to him. And it's interesting, actually, the rubber brings out in one of the footnotes over here, proof that the men had earrings from what we see actually a little bit later on with the story of Chet Egel. Because if you remember, they collect jewelry. And if you remember, the women refused to give. And yet they still had an abundance of jewelry in a very quick amount of time because the men gave their jewelry. Interesting side point here, okay? So we're in Ois Hei, and according to what we just said above in Dalid, that we specifically chose the ear because it's actually a lighter punishment because it was something that was very common. One would assume it would be the left ear because the left ear is considered the weaker side. But we need to conclude that the ear was chosen not because it was simply a lighter punishment, but rather because it heard the commandments and yet transgressed them. So you punish the ear and specifically the right one, which is considered the superior one. And to explain the reason why specifically the punishment of boring the ear, of piercing the ear, Rashi explains it specifically because he heard do not steal. And not because he now acquired for himself another master. So too, one who sells himself is held accountable, v'holach v'konai adon la'atzmai, and not now because now he says, I don't want to go free. When someone steals, you can try to explain this transgression by saying he was simply desperate, and therefore you don't embarrass him immediately with piercing his ears. He serves his time, and that is enough of a shame, and you would imagine he would await the day of his freedom. However, if he chooses to remain slave, this reflects that from the onset, he never really saw his transgression as an embarrassing. And therefore, he is held accountable for what he did 6 years ago because his decision now, in a sense, is a reflection of a decision that he made back then. So yes, we punish him now and not immediately when he stole, but we do punish him for his stealing. Because the fact that even now, when he has the ability to go free, and he yet has embraced and wants and desires the slave mentality, that shows that his original decision was driven by a lack of true confidence in being his own master, meaning being given over to the ultimate master, that of the Eibishter. And this helps us answer some of the questions that we had earlier, primarily the questions that we asked of why don't we pierce his ear immediately and why this doesn't apply to all thieves. Okay. It also helps us understand why we punish him now for what he did back then, okay? And that's why Rashi brings the seemingly extra words of he heard it at Sinai. Hashem, when he gave the Torah, he knew that the day would come when they would face extreme poverty, and yet he still commanded them, do not steal. And he proclaimed, they are servants to me. So what we're basically saying, you were there. You were at Sinai. You think the Eibishter didn't know that you were going to go through a hard time. You didn't think the Eibishter was unaware of the challenges that his people would face. And yet, Imkol Zeh, with all of that, he still commanded you to make sure that you don't steal. And he commanded you not to acquire yourself a master. So your ear that heard it, but not Stam heard it at Sinai, and yet there's a part of you that sort of doubted that the Eibishter could provide for you. And you thought that the only way that you could provide for yourself is by transgressing something that the Eibishter asked of you. You deserve that your ear be pierced, okay? Also, this helps us understand why Rashi brings in the words like Rabbi Yochanan expanded, like a pack of pearls, or like some say a thing of perfume. Because if you recall, the words of Rabbi Yochanan, actually, the words exactly in the Rashi are, I'm just looking for them here, the words of Rabbi Shimon, which are explained like a pack of pearls or slash a bag of perfume, spices. He says, Rabbi Shimon HaYadoyresh. So Rashi is explaining why he's bringing a drash when he's trying to explain the text. So he says like a pack of pearls. And I think as women will get that. You know, sometimes you have an outfit and it's missing something. And then you put on that perfect string of pearls and the whole outfit changes. Because it's not just the necklace, not just the around your neck that benefits from the string of pearls, but the whole outfit suddenly sits right because of the string of pearls. The same is with perfume. Perfume is not just contained. The reason you wear perfume is because you want it to sort of spread its, you know, smell, its pleasantness into the surrounding area. So the Rashi is saying, I brought you this vart of Rabbi Shimon, HaYadoyresh. I know that it's not the text. I know that it's a little bit deeper. Mikrazen kimin chaymer. But I need this drash because it acts like a string of pearls. The drash here, which is the idea of the reason why the Eibishter specifically chose the door, because it was then that we smeared the blood, and it was then that the Eibishter declared that he is our master. This vart, so to speak, influences that which I said earlier, which is the idea of, this is the ear that heard, you will be my slaves on Har Sinai. So do you understand what we're saying over here? That the words of Rabbi Shimon, they're a drash, they're not a pshat. And Rashi says, I get that. But I'm bringing them like a string of pearls, because their vart will shed light on the explanation earlier that I brought about, this is the ear that heard at Sinai that you should not steal and that you should not acquire yourself master. It gives us a little bit of a deeper and a better appreciation of that pshat once we have this drash. Okay. And then the Rebbe goes on to explain how Rabbi Shimon, just give me a minute over here. Okay. Okay, then he goes on to explain, I'm sorry about that, the notion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And who was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, if you're familiar, lived at a very, very difficult time in our history. He lived towards the end of Bayis Sheni, where Bnei Yisrael were plagued with famine and starved, and just, it was an awful, awful time to be. And yet, what was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai at that point? He's famous for Ten Liyavne Vechachameha. When given the opportunity to ask for anything, one of the things that he asks for is, give me Yavne Vechachameha. I need Yavne and her sages, because he understood that the only way the Jewish people are going to survive is because if they have Torah and mitzvahs. And so when Rashi brings this idea of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the one that explained, that is Daska Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that explained why the ear, because the ear heard, do not steal. And the ear heard at Har Sinai where the Eibishter said, you know, you are, I am your master. And when we understand where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lived for, and despite that, he went and he upheld Torah, we understand that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wasn't just talking from a place of theoretical. He was living in the deepest, darkest times. He was living in a time of famine and a time of terrible, terrible poverty. And yet he understood that what is our survival? Our survival is going to be if we embrace the Torah. If we remember what we heard at Sinai. So where we are in Zakkai, once we understand that, we can appreciate even more so what Rashi is bringing. Meaning, this ganev that he went and stole. Yes, taka true that you're in a desperate place. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gets that. He knows. He knows what desperation looks like. And yet remember, you cannot provide yourself by stealing. because you're transgressing the very vessel of bracha that's supposed to provide for you. And when we hear from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, we're able to accept it in even a deeper way, because like I said, he lived during a time of intense famine and poverty, and yet he understood that the way we're going to survive this is through holding on to the Torah. And the Taka, that's what happened. He was given Yavne, and we're here today studying Torah thanks to his foresight. Also, another very important detail of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is that he very much advocated for Gmilas Chasadim. And it actually says a story that at one point they stood in the place of where the Mikdash once stood, and they saw the destruction, like mamish, like still smoking. And Rabbi Yeshua, his student, said to him, oi, that we had to witness the Churban. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, take comfort in the fact that we still have Gmilas Chasadim. Meaning, to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, how are we going to be able to survive the destruction? We have Torah and we have Gemilas Chasadim. And what Rashi is, again, by telling us who Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is, Rashi is hinting to us two things. First of all, he's telling us this poor Ganev that thought the only way that he could provide for himself is by stealing. He should know that there's a notion of Gemilas Chasadim. The same Ebrisa that told him do not steal also commanded us to provide for others. So he should seek that out. He should look for places that will provide him Gemilas Chasadim. It also places the responsibility on us. If the Ebrisa said do not steal, and we know there's going to be situations where people have no way to provide themselves, we have to make sure that we're providing the Gemilas Chasadim so nobody feels like the only way that they could take care of themselves is through Chas v'Shalom stealing. So it's a reflection on both the giver and the taker within society. And that can be understood in greater depth when we know who is the author of this statement. And then also the Rebbe brings out this Nakoda, how this ear is being pierced because it heard from Hashem. And in a way, when you steal, it's a reflection of a chosse b'emunah. It's a reflection of a lack in faith. In other words, you think that the Eibush there will not provide for you. You're lacking a certain emunah in the Eibush being able to provide for you. And so you think, I need to take matters into my own hands. The only thing that I could do is transgress the Eibush as well. So there's a certain irony in that, and that's something that needs to be addressed. And then in conclusion, the Rebbe says, Yaina Shel Taira, in the fun parts of the Yaina Shel Taira, the wine, the Chassidus in Taira, the Rebbe says like this. In our day and age, I think, thank God, most of us are not finding ourselves in a situation of stealing and slavery. However, there's this notion of, when was it that the slave and the thief had this opportunity to go free? It was during the sabbatical year, during the Shemitah, what's known as like the Shabbaton. And the question is, in our own day-to-day life, we have the 6 days of the week. And then Shabbos is, so to speak, the Shabbaton. It's our Shemitah. So 6 days of the week, we work the land and we're involved in the various areas of our life. And then along comes Shabbos. And here comes the question. What do you do when Shabbos comes? Do you say, oh, I'm so comfortable with my new master. I'm so comfortable with my new relationships. In the 6 days of the week, I don't want to go free. I don't want to enter Shabbos. And that's where this Rashi comes along and forces us to pause and to remember, wait a second. What are you doing during those 6 days of the week? Have you become a slave to slaves? Like the Avisha was concerned about when he jumped over our doorposts that were smeared with the self-sacrifice of the Karban Pesach. Or do you recognize that the same Abishtra that told me to throw myself into the 6 days of creation, it wasn't a means to an end. The 6 days of creation are not there for the 6 days of the creation. The 6 days of creation are there to provide me for the Shabbos. And so every week we have this opportunity to go free, to pause and to exit that place where we feel like we have no ownership of our time or our space or our thoughts because we're so busy trying to make ends meet. And then Shabbos comes along and the Eibushter says, stop, spend time with me. remember that I know that you're going to go through challenges, and yet I promise that I will provide you. And we know, of course, also that it says that whatever we invest in Shabbos, Shabbos will reinvest in us in a much, much greater in amounts, exponentially greater. And that's also a very unique element of that women have, this feminine touch of Malchus, which is the idea of Shabbos, where you are the Mekabel, you receive. It says, whoever doesn't prepare for Shabbos will have nothing to eat on Shabbos, right? And yet, so we have to work on the 6 days of the week in order to benefit on Shabbos. And yet then, if we stop and we enter Shabbos the way we're supposed to be, as true avodim to the Eibishter, then whatever we invest in Shabbos, Shabbos births that much more so into the week. All right.